Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 16. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films.
Graham, how's it going?
Hey, Ben, what's up?
Not much. It's Friday. Today sees the wide release of Mad Max Fury Road. I guess technically last night. I saw it, you saw it, so I wanted to talk a little bit about it. This is going to be a full-on spoiler review, or I don't even know if it's going to be a review, but just a discussion of the movie. So, just right out of the gate, what do you think overall?
Loved it. It was amazing. And it just dragged, it hooked me immediately for that first sort of, what felt like about 40 minutes, which just was nonstop movement. Obviously, when Max is kidnapped and imprisoned, he you know, quickly makes his escape, and things get moving pretty quickly once the Furiosa character, played by Charlize Theron, sort of goes out on her mission. Things all sorts of seem to sort of happen pretty quickly, and after that opening chase sequence is just incredible. One of the coolest action sequences I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome how quickly they get into it. Like, I figured, okay, so she's kind of an established figure in the society, so we'll probably see her be that for a little while, and then, you know, she'll have a turn, and then, yeah, we'll get to that. But no, like, right out of, like, as soon as we understand what her function is, she immediately goes against it and then takes a left turn, literally, and we get into the action. I wasn't expecting that at all. I figured that the movie was going to rest on that opening that Max has captured for a bit before it gets back into the action. So I was really surprised and pleasantly surprised that, hey, they just got right back into it. And for the rest of the film, really, that was the pattern. You know, there's a little bit of downtime, and I really appreciated how character development happened in the thick of things, you know, on the back end, rather than, you know, setting up the people and then putting them in situations. You meet Furiosa and the brides or the breeders. You meet them, like, in the middle of all the action, and then you get to know them kind of as it develops. And I think that's that's an essential way to construct an action movie. So yeah, I thought that was really satisfying.
Yeah. So just from a broader perspective, and I didn't want to share this with, I saw this on Wednesday, and I, you know, you guys saw it yesterday. I didn't want to share this sort of reaction with it. It felt like an episode of Samurai Jack to me. And because at the end, the big payoff for me occurred, and what really pushed this thing over the top as a great movie for me was the end of the movie, and I'm just going to include spoilers here.
Yeah.
Is when the breeders or the women are all back at the Citadel, and everything's great, and you think, okay, Max is going to stick around and maybe even have a romance with the Charlize Theron character. But then the Charlize Theron character looks down, and it cuts to a shot of Max. He's distant. He's off in the crowd. He sort of waves, and he's on his way. And that, to me, was like, oh, my God. He's just taking care of business, and he's moving on to the next adventure, which very much reminded me of The Man with No Name from the Sergio Leone movies, and also of the Toshiro Mifune character from the Kurosawa movies. This is just, it's like he wasn't meant to stay with them or anything. He randomly fell into all their company, and he's moving on. And I love that aspect.
Yeah.
Of it. It's a very episodic feel, and I love that it sort of stands alone what it is, and then hopefully if they make another Mad Max movie, it's like going to be a brand new adventure with brand new characters.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this movie did a really good job of setting up, you know, there's other cities in just that little area there that you tell a whole movie just in those.
Gas Town and the Bullet Farm.
Exactly, yeah. The structure of the movie, I really dug a lot, and the whole time I kept thinking of Dredd, the new movie from a few years ago, the Judge Dredd movie, because that movie perfectly sets up this sci-fi future world, the good and bad dichotomy, and then brings you the character, then brings you a side character through which you can meet this main character, and then gets to the point of, you know, the problem and what they have to tackle, and then it kind of wraps everything up in 90 minutes. And it, within that, you've got this really tight, awesome action movie that perfectly transplants you to a different world. So I think the best parts of Mad Max Fury Road mirror that kind of structure. And it's the same thing, you know, where this isn't a character study of Max. It's really not a character study of anybody, but really the emotional arc belongs to Furiosa. But Max is kind of the eyes of the audience. So I think,
right.
Yeah, I really like that. And I read an interview with George Miller earlier that he said after the first few movies, he would go to other countries and people would talk to him about Mad Max and say, he would go to Japan and they would say, you know, he's a samurai. And then he would, you know, come to the U.S. and people would say, well, he's like an old, you know, Clint Eastwood gunslinger. So yeah, there is a kind of this universal Ronin kind of cross-cultural Ronin character that I think Max kind of taps into nicely. And I think that it fits so perfectly into what George Miller wanted to design, is this kind of internationally, globally appealing action movie that relies primarily on action and visuals to tell the story rather than, you know, long scenes of dialogue or exposition.
And speaking of the visuals, that's what got me so excited initially after seeing the trailers. And I think we just talked about how well the story and the characters work for us in this. But the visuals absolutely delivered in terms of cinematography, art direction, and makeup. And then, you know, the incorporation of visual effects. I mean, there's obviously some CGI in this, but in very few cases was it obvious. I think
yeah.
that it's dominated by practical in-camera effects that just made this feel really special, you know, because usually when we see movies on this scale and with this kind of scope and level of imagination and creativity in this day and age, they're dominated by effects that are obviously computer-generated. And this, you know, was definitely a welcome first departure from that for me.
Yeah, whenever Dark Knight Rises came out and there's that last act battle, you know, with all those extras and all these real Batmobiles driving around, the real bat flying vehicle thing kind of hovering around the streets and stuff, I really valued that just because I was like, this may be the last time we see a big-scale action movie climax that relies heavily on real people and real things interacting, you know, where there's not just a bunch of digital extras. So it's really nice that just not a few years later, we've got this very analog action movie. And I kind of feel like a lot of people are saying this is, you know, one of the best action movies ever and things like that. And I'm wondering if a little bit of that praise is just coming from a place of longing for those types of movies. You know, I'm not sure if this would rank as highly for everybody if it had come out, you know, in the heyday of action, of kind of practical effect action movies. Do you see any of that kind of more like a, do you feel like there's any kind of exaggeration in the reception of this movie? Because of its place amongst kind of more digital blockbuster movies?
I think that I totally get that. And it's, you know, like I just said, I appreciate it a great deal for, you know, being a big budget epic action movie that relies on practical effects. But I think that it stands on its own. And yeah, I certainly think that, you know, especially when you want to put it up to the other Mad Max movies. I've only seen The Road Warrior, but I've seen, you know, bits and pieces of Thunderdome and the original Mad Max. And this by far, you know, just destroys those movies in terms of quality of visuals. And I certainly think that the scope and scale of this would hold up in any heyday of practical in-camera effects-driven action films. Absolutely. And the thing is, too, is like, this is really, I'm really happy right now because I feel like this is the summer. It's the summer movie season. And when you have a great movie right now that makes you want to go back and see it again immediately, that, and that's the way I feel right now. I can't wait. I'm going to see it again.
And it's one of those that you have to see on the big screen. You know, it's like, it's, that's the draw here, is that you get to, it's kind of like a Mission Impossible, you know, Ghost Protocol situation for me, where after I saw that, because of the stunts in that movie, I told people that don't usually go to the movie theater, hey, you got to at least make time for this, because the best way to see this is going to be on a big screen, and you won't see it anywhere else, you know?
Right.
You can get digital effects on your, you know, Arrow TV shows, or, you know, or whatever you're watching on TV. You can get digital effects, but you can't get huge, large-scale stunts like this anywhere but in the theater, and that's the best place to experience it. So yeah, I definitely think it's a must-see in the theater, especially in the summertime, because the feeling that you have when you walk out of Mad Max Fury Road is, like you said, is pretty special.
Absolutely.
For me, I don't think I can put it over the Road Warrior, mostly because of the way that George Miller shoots a lot of the action. Like you said, the design is so awesome, and the stunts are so awesome. I feel like some of the camera tricks don't necessarily measure up to that, especially that opening really put me off. I read that he manipulated the frame rate for almost every shot in the movie, and I think especially in that first sequence, it's like a 15 frames per second frame rate versus the usual 24, and you can tell, and it's all jittery, and it feels sped up, and that was pretty obnoxious. It really bugged me, and it kind of turned me off on the movie, and honestly, it took a little while for me to really, really trust the movie again, and well, I can tell you the moment when I did was when they're coming through the valley, and those dudes on dirt bikes are, like, jumping over the convoy and dropping bombs. At that point, I was like, whoa, okay, I need to like, check myself, because I'm holding stuff against this movie that I don't need to. I need to enjoy what I'm seeing.
I recognized the manipulated frame rate as well, and I knew coming into this that George Miller, especially these older Mad Max movies, his sort of signature is, like, a frenetic, sort of absurd approach on anything, and for that for me worked and fit into the universe. Like, for instance, I'm pretty sure that, like, when he eats the lizard, it's sort of this, it's that you can sort of feel that it's just like this sort of nom, 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 nom. Set up that moment, and I that was at the very beginning of the movie, and it worked for me. So I embraced it. You know, sometimes when you try, you know, sort of gimmicks like that, it can put you off. It did for you. That's unfortunate, but for me, it worked.
Yeah, and I think it would have worked for me if it was more for, you know, effect, like, on, like, for a quick cut or, like, for a comedy, you know, or something like that, because there are beats of comedy in this that work really well. But for me, I'm just saying, kind of generally following action, I feel like he did it better in Road Warrior, where the shots were a little bit longer. I read somewhere that the cut ratio was, like, you know, 10 times higher in this movie than it was in the Road Warrior. And also the Road Warrior was 90 minutes, whereas this is 120. And I feel like also at the end of the day, you know, I was a little bit late at night, and I've got a kid, so I fall asleep pretty early these days. So I did feel that 2-hour runtime kind of bearing down on me towards the end of it. That's again, that difference between this and the Road Warrior or something like Dread. I feel like it's got a little bit more air in it than it needed to have. But yeah, overall, go ahead.
Well, they did. I was wondering, are they going to keep this pace for the entire movie? Because that first sort of adrenaline-charged 45 minutes of the movie, you know, I was wondering, like, are they going to take a breath ever? And they certainly do. When you get to the desert and things slow way down, both in terms of the speed of the vehicles and narratively. And I thought it was, I was like, okay, let's see if they can sort of, this is a little pit stop. Let's see if they can get that momentum back. They certainly did. And I thought that the sort of breather scene, not to be confused with breather, I felt like it was breather, In the Desert, absolutely, you know, lent itself to the narrative. It was beautiful. And then when it revved back up, I felt like, okay, that was nice. And I didn't get bored. And let's see what happens from here. And the climax totally delivered for me.
Yeah, you got to the, going back to the breeder thing, I'm really impressed at how bizarre certain aspects of this movie are, and it's totally consistent with the franchise, you know, but it's still the fact that this is a major summer release, and you've got a character like, I don't even know how to pronounce his name, but Joe, the kind of king of the Citadel, and the way he's put together, and his sons, and just the kind of perversion of everything. I'm impressed that they were able to, that the studio didn't intervene at all, that they literally let George Miller do this weird, crazy stuff out in the desert and, you know, give him a May release date. He had the track record, you know, and again, but even in that case, it's rare for studios to totally leave a guy alone. Do you have a favorite kind of bizarre thing in this movie where you were just like, oh my God, this is great?
Well, there's a lot to choose from. You know, certainly, maybe I love how the war boys spray their mouths with the silver spray paint. That became sort of a funny conceit. Obviously, the guitar player was awesome. That's one thing I'm bummed about. I'm bummed that his payoff didn't have a little more kick. I really wanted to see something bad happen to him. He sort of got trampled. But man,
He's just doing his job, man. He's not a bad guy. He's doing his job.
He represents the evil, you know, faction. So he certainly deserved it. You know, that was a really scary character. His eyes had been sort of like glued shut.
Right.
You know, and then you had the one of the brothers, which I thought was a really cool aspect of the story, the guy that with the thing covering his nose, the old fat man, bald man.
Yeah.
I love when they showed his disgusting feet, goiters, and, you know, then obviously the baby, man baby with the periscope or telescope. Yeah. There's just so much weirdness. The old women with the tattoos all over them.
The former WWE wrestler Nathan Jones as one of Joe's sons.
Which one is that?
The big guy with like the rubber mouth covering fights Joe fights Max at the very end.
What wrestler was he?
Nathan Jones. He was only in WWE for like a few months because he was such a bad wrestler. He's also he's also the tall dude that Brad Pitt stabs in the neck at the beginning of Troy.
He never got over in WWE.
No, he didn't have the in-ring skills.
Bummer. Let's look him up. Yeah, I love that character as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, this was just I loved it. I can't wait to see it again. For me, I haven't seen Avengers Age of Ultron yet, so this is my official kickoff to the summer. And it makes me feel like I used to feel when I was like a teenager or a young kid in the summer, where it's like, okay, man, there's already just a great entry into the summer. I hope that they keep coming.
Yeah, I mean, I just love right now that we've got, you know, out in theaters, we've got a PG-13 superhero movie, you know, that everybody kind of likes. Then you've got Pitch Perfect.
Oh, is Avengers not rated G?
You know, not this cut, you know, as Disney gets their stranglehold, maybe they'll, you know, start paring those movies down. But, I mean, it's got the kind of humor in it that, the kids that think that G-rated movies are for like little babies, it has enough language in it for those kids to think that they're cool for seeing it. I'm talking about me and Matt basically. But no, you've got this big, big, colorful superhero movie. Then you've got a comedy in Pitch Perfect, and then you've got this R-rated action movie. And this is how summer should be. You know, it shouldn't just be, you know, PG-13 superhero movie, you know, one after the other. There should be a little bit of something for everybody with varying levels of intensity and interest. So yeah, it's nice right now that we've got some really good options in the theater. And yeah, I definitely would suggest seeing Mad Max on the biggest, loudest screen that you could find.
Yeah. I was fortunate. I went to an AMC multiplex at Penn Station, near Penn Station in New York, where I've had problems before, actually audio issues, but saw it in 2D, perfect seats, stadium seating, massive screen, awesome sound system, and it was amazing. And it was also a free screening, so that was another plus.
Oh, nice.
But I did spend, like, you know, $12 on a Cherry Coke and popcorn.
That's, you know, it's the summer special right there.
Yep. It was awesome, man. So, yeah, hopefully Avengers will be good and we'll continue this hot streak we have going on now.
Yeah, hey, man, we've got Tomorrowland next week, so that's an even totally different flavor of movie. So hopefully it'll end up being a good summer. Thanks for talking to me about Mad Max, Graham. Looking forward to the next one.
All right, then. Great, sounds good.
Matt Scalise, editor of FilmNerds.com. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films.
All right, so we talked to Graham about Mad Max Fury Road, and I've got Matt here on the line. How's it going, Matt?
Pretty good. Just full transparency, I may have to drop out at the moment that I pull up to my son's daycare. So that's what we're operating under.
Also, there's Australian men painted white chasing you on top of poles. And
right.
That's going to affect our pace.
Yeah, I mean, Ennio has been told to crawl back into the tank to hide, so it should be okay. I'm sure that Graham, I mean, my impression so far is that Graham was really excited, which I'll echo that here. I mean, I think that I went into this movie with very high expectations, and somehow this movie kind of exceeded them, and I think it's just because I didn't think it would be so uncompromising in what it was trying to do. I mean, I guess these days you go into a reboot or a remake type situation and you think, well, maybe best case, they'll take the stuff that was good about the original and they'll probably try to update it and modernize it somehow. But I was just so not prepared for the fact that George Miller was going to retain so much of his weird stylistic voice from the original trilogy in this movie. I mean, just feels like it was really risky and that he didn't really care if he alienated teenagers with the way that he made this movie. He just made another Mad Max movie.
Yeah, and that's one thing that Graham and I talked about, was just the audaciousness of this movie and how it's just, you know, some Australian dudes out in the desert doing whatever they want, and the studio is totally okay with that. I think that was a big, I guess I was for some reason expecting that, just because the movie had been in development for so long that I figured, well, why would he cheap out now, you know, and let go of his convictions after so long when he could have just not made the movie. But I was even expecting kind of that Mad Max Road Warrior weirdness. I was still blown away at certain moments at exactly how weird the things on screen were and how upsetting a lot of the violence is. I mean, that's something that's been in this franchise since the very beginning. We're doing spoilers, but I won't go into specific. There's especially one moment where I was originally going to go see it with my wife, and since having a baby, she's gotten a little bit more squeamish about certain types of violence on screen, and she didn't get to go to the movie. And this morning when I was talking to her about it, I was like, you know, this might actually be a good one to watch at home when we can pause it and walk away for just a second, because there are some horrendously violent things that happen here.
I mean, it's brutal, and mm-hmm. but at the same time, I think that it's all used really effectively. I think the most significant death in the movie, I mean, it's such a great screenplay moment because it motivates both sides of the conflict. But it sort of serves as, it makes the villain more pissed off, and it's kind of the moment that brings all of the heroes together too. And it's not just a cheap shock death moment. You know, it's not just, well, we got to kill somebody off now, and we're this far into the movie. So, I mean, I just feel like, it just feels so refreshing to get a screenplay that really feels like this movie. I mean, you've mentioned it already because of the process of it. Everything about it, from the way it's written to the way it looks, feels like a movie from the 80s or early 90s. And it's hard. I mean, I think we say that about a lot of movies, but this really feels like it was made in that time. I mean, there's some CG, and I think that it's mostly effective. It doesn't really bother me or stick out all that much. But the fact that they're so sparing with it is really appreciated too. And I think that's what's so exciting. I think that's what everybody's been excited about with this movie, is they really did go out in the desert and put a bunch of gasoline into some tanks and blow it up. Like a real fireball explosion happened when they made this movie. They did not CG the fireballs. And it makes a huge difference. It pays off and feels so much more dangerous and threatening and exciting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I will be honest to say that at a certain point, the visual, the rapidity of the visuals and the editing and the really kind of high-impact cutting and everything, it did kind of blur together for me, where at a certain point I was like, well, you know what, if this was all CGI, I don't know if I would be able to tell, because it was going by so quickly. But because I have that meta knowledge going in, that does help make every other stunt. You know, every stunt that I see, when I see dudes swinging around on poles like we were talking about, I'm feeling that, because I know that's not a green rag at the top of a stick, you know, that got comped in. These are professionals doing their job as well as they can. And I think it's rare, and it's totally worth doing. I totally agree. Going back to that big death, I think that the more I think about it, the more I like it, because because that death happens to, like, the leader of a certain little subset of characters, little grouping, where before that grouping seems like they could have all been cannon fodder except for that one. The fact that you knock off kind of the lead character in that group brings up the stakes for the rest of them, because now you know, oh, well, now they're on equal footing, and these are all as important, and we know that any of them can drop, and we don't want that.
Yeah, I also wanted to bring in one more thing before I drop out of this very quick podcast, which is that just from watching the other three in the franchise pretty recently, I think it's interesting that he's done a little bit of evolving of the post-apocalyptic world that he's built from this sort of, I think at first it's just very much kind of lawlessness, anarchy is what we're seeing. And then we've sort of seen them add in more elements of kind of complexity over time, and where they really are getting into kind of proto-religious type stuff. And I thought they did a lot of really interesting stuff with that. The idea that he has all these sort of religious zealots working for him and willing to die for him, and all of the weirdly like ceremonial stuff that was going on. I just found that so fascinating. And I think I'm kind of glad that it's the fourth movie in a franchise doing that, because it's for some reason it feels like they've earned it, and it feels like this world he created is becoming more interesting with every movie.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The world of the Road Warrior on steroids, basically. Like you said, the stakes raised and the power structures have grown. It just makes everything all the scarier.
All right, that's what I got. I loved it.
Yeah, I did too. So did Grant.
2015 is two for two on summer 2015.
Yep, so far we're doing pretty well. All right, next time we'll talk about Hot Pursuit. See you then.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com and aspectradioshow.com.
This is how I sort of imagined it going down. It's like, you know, all right, Warner Brothers, like, I gave you two Happy Feet. You're going to give me, like, one Mad Max for two Happy Feet. I mean, I like made, like, almost $1 billion. You know, so, like, just let me go, you know. Like, I've had the script done for, like, 10 years. And, you know, come on, man. Like, don't even need the CGI frame store, CGI houses to intervene. Going to do it all in camera. And, let's just go, right? Like, I've already got it storyboarded. Just freaking do it, man. Like, what do you want? Like, one or two more Happy Feet? Come on.